Welcome to the PAL Podcast, the first podcast for parents and caregivers in the performing arts and the institutions who support them. We are Parent Artist Advocacy League for the Performing Arts. PAL, thanks for tuning in. Hello, and welcome to the fourth episode of our PAL podcast. We are Parent Artist Advocacy League for the Performing Arts and Media, and we are here to advocate for parents and caregivers and for institutions who support them. We are a national resource hub and solutions generator and community so that you know you're not alone and there are better ways to do this. Today, I am so excited because I'm going to be talking with Roberta Pereira, who is the producing director at Playwrights Realm, and she and I have had the absolute privilege of working together on something called the RPI Project, which stands for Radical Parent Inclusion. Roberta is a producer off-Broadway and has such leadership capabilities that she is taking radical parent inclusion and applying it to a full off-Broadway production called Mothers by Anna Mensch. We're going to be doing a series on this project, and today we are talking with Roberta. So this series is called RPI Series on the PAL Podcast. And today we're talking about off-Broadway saying yes to mothers. Now, this is going to be like listening in on a phone conversation with Roberta and I hope I ask the questions that you would want to ask. But if there's anything that you are still wondering that was not addressed in the conversation, shoot us an email, shoot us a comment, and we'll get Roberta to reply to it. Because I know her. I got connections. Also, I just want to give a little bit of context for a few things that we talk about. Mothers is playing right now. Today is Friday the 13th. Ooh. And the first preview goes up tonight. If you're in New York, it plays through October. So you've got to catch it. And on October 5th, there is a childcare matinee. That's free childcare. That's right. On site. Provided by Broadway Babysitters, such an incredible organization that we're thrilled to partner with on this project as well. And then the last few things is there are going to be links in the description of this podcast that are going to link you to all the incredible things that we talk about. Check them out. Use those resources. Know that they're there for you. I also want to say that Roberta is going to mention something that we provide at PAL, which is the framework for how we develop parent support. And that parent support follows three guidelines. One, is it legal? Two, is it ethical? And three, is it compassionate? So as we move forward with this conversation, just know that we're working from this framework and we're excited to bring the story of this support to you. So Roberta, I'm so excited to be talking to you. I'm Rachel Spencer Hewitt, the founder of Parent Artist Advocacy League. And now it's time for you to jump on and eavesdrop on our amazing phone call earlier today. Check it out.
I would love to hear about, you know, how this idea came up for you, like that moment of inception when it clicked for you personally of, I want to institutionalize this. I want to make it formal.
Yeah. So for me, this really came about as I started, when I became a parent, almost 2 years ago now, I started being invited. I was always have been a pretty active speaker in a lot of different theater events, and I started being invited to participate in panels around parenting and the arts. And so the first one that I put together was a panel at BroadwayCon, and then one at the TCG Fall Forum, which Pal and Rachel invited me. And I just started hearing from a lot of freelance artists about some of their challenges. And of course, I was facing challenges as a new mom, and especially as a solo mom. But, you know, my job as producing director of the Playwrights Realm, I have a salary, I have health insurance fully paid by the Realm. And so I also, because I'm one of the people who run the organization, I have a certain amount of flexibility in my schedule. So there are a lot of things that actually this job makes it very conducive to be a mom. And I just started hearing all these stories about artists and how really horror stories about, you know, them having to basically hide a part of themselves. And that I'm a big champion that art is better when everybody can participate. And I started thinking about, I've been doing a lot of work with including more people of color in theater, and I started thinking about how, you know, everybody should include parents and caretakers too.
Yeah.
And sort of what could we as an organization, as, you know, an organization that really champions artists, and me personally do about it.
Yeah.
So that's when I started having this idea, like, what if we did a production process off Broadway that was radically inclusive to parents, and what would that mean? And really, I'm not a big fan of doing things just because that's the way things have always been done. I love thinking about things in a different way and, like, looking at it differently. And so this was an opportunity for that. I said, like, what if really we looked at everything? Like, you know, nothing is off the table. And just really be creative about it and start from that point as opposed to the point, let's make parents fit in this process. But yeah, let's make this process fit for parents.
Absolutely. I think that the personal insight, like that empathy, is so key in creating access, right? Because you had some advantages, you had some obstacles, but it was about you hearing what the obstacles were outside of your scope of discipline, and then you had the power to create change for that. And so I think that that's a testimony to, you know, leadership style that doesn't get talked about enough, which is the power of empathy in the activities that you ask your people to engage in, which is so awesome. I've loved working with you on this project. And, you know, we've been talking since the Fall Forum, but we've been really down in the dirt with it all since February. So this has been an extended process. I would love to know, in terms of the pre-production and the planning, what surprised you the most?
It surprised me that, you know, we made a very conscious decision of being very forward about trying to hire as many parents as possible, right? Mm-hmm. So this was like kind of a dual thing, right? We were trying to put this amazing play together, but because of the idea surrounding this production, we wanted to hire as many parents as possible. And one thing that became clear, honestly, is that parent artists book their schedules way further in advance. So that was an interesting thing that obviously now that I think about it, it's duh, like, obviously, like, I get it. But at the time, and I mean, you know, we're still having these conversations, like, way far in advance, but it was even further than the non-parents artists. You know, like, I haven't done a scientific study of this, but if I had to compare, I would say, generally speaking, the parent artists have to figure out their lives further in advance than the non-parents. So that was a surprise, and now it seems obvious, but at the time I was like, wow, I didn't think that was going to be a challenge.
Right. It would be a difficult one to anticipate, I think, because it's so part of the nuance of scheduling outside of production. Mm-hmm. Like, the scheduling that goes into a freelance artist's life before they meet your production is a weird thing, I think, for a producer to anticipate, but so cool that we discovered that. I remember you being like, oh, wow, the whole list of individuals we want to ask, they were pre-booked. And that's a wonderful thing. It's also, it makes the planning, a note on the planning process, significant. In terms of things that have worked really well and what you planned in the budget, what were you like, aha, I did that well. That's something that I want to see happen again, that in the pre-planning of the budget you put in, that's now been put into action.
I actually think that the main thing that worked well is, and this is completely how we do things at the Realm, so it also made sense, right? So at the Realm, a lot of times, so for example, because we give our playwrights specifically, we try to give them support that they individually need. So different playwrights need very different kinds of support, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of times, this has been a challenge with my job because I'm budgeting without knowing what we're going to need. So sometimes I make educated guesses, but I also try to leave as much flexibility as possible for us to be able to move things and say, like, oh, this play, like, you know, we had a situation, for example, some years ago that a playwright's computer died, you know, and then she came to us and she's like, oh, I would love to use some of my funds to buy a new computer. And, like, I didn't have a line for a new computer, but I had a line for, you know, professional development or whatever. So then I was like, great, we can use that, you know, so, like, having that kind of flexibility because it was what that person needed at that time to be responsive. Yeah. And so in this case, that was the thing. I think from the beginning, the two of us were very clear about the fact that, we didn't know. I mean, you know, parents and caregivers, that's a pretty big category, right? So
yeah,
different
right.
parents and caregivers have totally different needs. And so what we did is I put together, you know, a sample budget of what we thought the certain things we were going to be doing, but there was a big amount of flexibility in it. So as we
right.
put together the team and we discovered their needs, we were able to kind of move those funds as necessary. And this is still happening, right? Like as we, for example, as our childcare matinee gets more and more popular every day, it is
larger and larger
the place to be.
Yes.
Yeah, which is amazing, but then obviously it means that it needs we need more support there, right? Because we need
right.
more caregivers, like sitters. So anyway, so it's like so allowing putting together that budget, but allowing for flexibility was something that was very necessary in this process, and honestly, I think any process with parents and caregivers because the needs are vastly different.
Totally, that's so true, and we have been. And you and I talked about this a lot, and in the Pell resources, we say, you know, this is not a prescriptive understanding. Like, there are a plethora of ways to help parent artists. It's going to be about listening to what that individual needs and having a vocabulary of then what do you do when that person needs that specific kind of access. But something that I did learn from you when we were having this conversation and seeing you interact with the different individuals in your theater is that you do this so well. And you also have the support of your staff and you have the, seemingly have great support from your board. And it seems like you as a leader have set a tone of, well, this is what we say yes to. We say yes to the person. This is our budget is flexible, but you can trust me with it because I know how to do my job. And so I would love to hear that part of that part of the perspective for you on how you set up the work culture to be able to embrace that when this opportunity came along. People were surprised by the details by it because everyone was learning, but nobody seemed surprised that, okay, we're doing this now as the playwrights realm. This is who we're accepting and this is who we're bringing in. And so what aspects do you think went into those conversations or in those work culture values that really primed it for this to be possible?
Yeah, I think, you know, the playwrights realm, I think especially since I've come here for, like, I've been here for 4 years now, we have been a lot more transparent and vocal about our values of being an organization that embraces, for example, equity, anti-discrimination, anti-racism. And so, and I try to make these values very encompassing, you know, like as I said, this belief of mine that I do think that's like, that art should be welcoming to everybody and everybody should feel like it's theirs as well, you know? And so this was just part of it. I mean, it just fits so nicely in. Like, I don't even feel like there was much explanation needed.
Right.
I will say, though, that the session that we did with you that was about empathy, specifically with my staff, because I'm the only person in my staff right now that has a child, you know, like there are 9 of us like here in the office. And that session was really wonderful because I think, and we've talked about it, you know, we've talked about it later. We're like about other subjects. Nothing. We're like, oh yeah, it was like that when Rachel was talking about empathy and it's very interesting. And I think it has helped us serve artists better and not just parent artists, artists in general, just thinking about this, you know, I made a little note from your talk that it's like how we make decisions. Is it legal? Is it ethical? Is it compassionate? And
right.
I have it literally
right.
up on my desk. I'm looking at it right now. Because I think that's a very interesting framework. And as I said, it fits so nicely with already the culture of what we do here and being really led by our values. And going back to what you said, I think that the reason why it works so well is because I think that the values of the organization mirror a lot of the values of the people within the organization.
Sure.
So I think that everybody here, the staff, really believes in these values. And so they want to work harder for them, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I was very moved by, I knew that you were the only parent when we came in and, you know, we talked about, I was like, I would like to do compassion training. And when we did that session, and I was so moved by how engaged everyone was. They were so honest and transparent and wanting to learn. And I think it's also important to state that part of that training was also for us to come to them and say, you know, in all honesty, this is not supposed to feel comfortable or perfect all the time. Like, we are about to engage in something that is going to have its obstacles and its upsets. And I think that that was an important and a really valuable point that you were willing to lead with as well with your team. And you've said it to me multiple times. You're like, this is part of the learning process and this is how we take care of it. And it's just been really encouraging. So that said, on that encouraging note, on now that we've like prepped everyone with like the process that went into it, could you tell me about the play and how it spoke to you? We'll be talking to Anna later, but I would love to hear about why you're like, this play, because it's different than just in like your typical mom play. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on it.
Well, that's kind of one of the things that I love the most about it. Like originally when I had this idea to do this parenting thing, you know, that I didn't even really know what it was. I knew that I wanted to do it connected to a play that was written by a parent, probably a mother. But we didn't have the play yet, right? Like this play, I mean, it all like worked out wonderfully well, but we didn't have the actual play. And so I was kind of waiting for the perfect play. And when I read this play, what I loved about it is how dark it is, honestly. Like it's so unexpected, you know, and especially when you hear the origin story of the play, which I'm sure Anna will talk to you about. You know, she was a new mom and thinking about these things that were so huge, and this is how she dealt with it. It's awesome. Like I have this dream of I really want somebody to ask me to write an essay about like mothers who write horror stories, you know, because I've always been a big fan of Mary Shelley. And, you know, I don't know if you know this, but she wrote Frankenstein. Yes. It was partially based on the experience of having her daughter, you know. And when you read Frankenstein, you're like, I understand how mother wrote this. And I actually think mothers is like Frankenstein. Like, that's my big thing. I see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that there is a special kind of horror that you start experiencing when you become a mother, because suddenly the worst case scenario becomes much worse.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like suddenly you're imagining all these things that can happen, and it's bad, you know?
Yeah.
It's not just about you anymore. And I really appreciate the mothers that are able to put that out there and share that. So that's what I really like about the play. And I think, you know, and I think some people will be shocked about it. And I think that some people, it will be very unexpected. It's not what they think they're coming into. But I kind of like that. I think theater should kind of rock you a little bit. You know, if you're feeling too comfortable and you forget about the show by the time you get dinner afterwards, and kind of what's the point, you know?
Right.
Like,
right.
So that's what I think is so exciting about this play. It's how unexpected it is.
Oh, that's so good. I knew the connection with Mary Shelley, but you connecting it to this piece and knowing mothers, I think it's so true. There's a kind of a revolutionary act in shaking up the mother image, but also telling the truth about it, that when it happens, there's also kind of like a monster experience that happens in your body, around your body. The world becomes a bit like a dream, almost a nightmare sometimes. I totally see the connection now to the world shifting on us, and sometimes embracing that darkness is what's telling them the deepest truth about what and like have the capacity to feel or see.
Right.
Why.
And all of this is like in the best case scenario, right? Like you're going through all these things, but like we're talking about moms that like still have a home and still have a network of support and all of that, right? Like imagine like
what,
exactly. And this is where the privilege comes. And this is the part that I think is interesting, is that in the story, essentially what Anna has done is she removed the privilege from these women that had lots of privilege.
Right.
Like that. I mean, not all of them, but most of them.
Right.
There's the one character who doesn't, but, and so I think that that's what's interesting too. And like then what?
Yes.
If you don't have all of those things, if you don't have all of that network, like if it's just you, you know, and your kid, what kind of person, in a way, that's when you find out who you really are, right?
Yeah,
when everything else is kind of ripped away, like what is the essence? What is like the core of it? So I am really interested in that conversation. I also think this show is like a dystopian thing. Also in the, like Margaret Atwood, like in that world, you know what I mean? Like, and I think that that's interesting because it's like, it's sometimes it doesn't feel as far from our world as I wish it would feel, you know what I mean?
Totally.
Like sometimes it's like, oh.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned it's not so absurd because I think in the comfort of the theater seat, it's going to feel like a wild ride. But when we really take a look at it, like you're saying, there are nightmares happening every day that reflect mm-hmm. what happens on the stage. And mm-hmm. it, to a certain extent, I'm of the persuasion that part of art's role is to do us well by introducing to us situations that challenge who we would be in those situations, like you said, but in a way that feels absurd when we initially engage with it. But the more we embrace it and suspend our disbelief, I think we'll start to see the similarities in the parallels with kind of the horrors that are happening around the world and increase what we talked about earlier, is that empathy. So I'm mm-hmm. really excited to see how audiences ask that question. Who would I be if that happened? I would love to hear now what you hope to take forward with you. I know that, you're still early days with getting it in the space and still early days with supporting the artists. What is one of the best areas of support or ways that you've supported these individuals and parents and caregivers? And what do you hope to continue and take with you through other productions that you can share now?
Well, I think that one thing for sure is just being very, like, I want us to, for every process that we do, for every production, to already say this, that you know, as part of, we have a whole, you know, first rehearsal, you were there, first rehearsal thing that we do and talked a little bit about our values with the artists, and we're always fine-tuning that. And part of that conversation is going to be also, like, we acknowledge that parenting and caretaking is a burden, an extra burden that can be placed on artists, so if there's anything we can do about it, let us know. Mm-hmm. Because I think that the thing that's amazing that I found in this production is, and I have not had this experience in other productions, is that people feel so free to talk about the challenges, their kids, and I've been in tech a lot, and I've been hearing this, you know, I've been hearing a parent talk to her daughter who wanted to quit karate or something, and then dealing with another parent who's having, I mean, you've been on these emails with me, who's having, like, childcare challenges and us trying to figure out how to work it out. And just, like, having a conversation yesterday, I was having a conversation with Anna, Robert, and Shane about, like, our children wanting to hurt us, which happens a lot, and, like, what they did. And, like, and it was, like, a normal conversation, but I was like, wow, this is so cool. It's just, like, everybody feels like it's okay to bring this part of yourself. I feel like with parents, a lot of times there's a lot of shame and a lot of, like, even if people know you're a parent, like, don't call attention to it kind of thing, you know?
Right.
And I think it's, like, why not? Like, why, like, this is a big part of my life, you know, so
yeah.
If I can't talk about this, like, I won't have much to talk about. And so anyway, so I think that is one thing, is just, like, I want from now on artists or anybody working here really to, parent artists, feel very comfortable bringing these things up with us, because we will only know how to help if they reach out, right? But I want them to know that the door is open, and I want us to be the first ones to say, we're here for you to talk about this, so they don't feel like they're approaching this closed door.
Yes. Yeah, that's genius. When I spoke with Inika Cedar, one of the researchers on the Wellesley Centers for Women study on women leadership in low resident theaters, long title, I asked her, you know, what, and I mentioned this in a lot of the interviews, but I asked her, I said, what do you recommend theaters do? What is the first thing that they can do? And she said, the first thing that any leadership can do is take the obligation of initiating the conversation off the vulnerable individual who's been hired or thinking about getting hired, and put it on the institution's obligation to start the conversation by saying, we support you. What do you need? And ask that of all genders, all disciplines, so that there's no discrimination that, you know, sneaks in through there. And so your intuition of taking that principle and saying, this has changed our work culture. Like, you're talking about examples that are already different. The freedom, I agree. I think that I have seen more freedom in dialogue from parents engaging with you and with us on this process than I've seen in most of my interviews across the country and their ability to come to you and say, hey, this is a difficulty, and know that you're going to look them eye to eye, and not, you know, they still get to be dignified, and you get to say, well, let's see what we can do, can be life changing and career changing.
It has been completely different, like just being in the room and the conversations and the way that people approach this. And a lot of times, like, it is, I mean, to be completely transparent about it, it is more work at some point, because you have to, like, oh my God, we have to figure this puzzle piece out, right? But I would rather, as I said, like, I would rather somebody feel like they have our support. And sometimes it has happened that we have gone to people and I was like, listen, we can help you in this way, but we can't help you in this way, you know? Because at the same time, like, part of my job, right, is still trying to support everybody, but then we have this amazing play that we're putting on, and I want to make sure that that I keep the integrity of that, and of course for a writer as well. So it's like balancing those things can be challenging, but I feel like that's just part of my job.
I think you do it very well, and I know this is just the beginning of some really, really exciting access that you're helping pave the way publicly, which is part of what makes this so radical. Could you please let us know now how people can get tickets for those who are ready to dive into the neo-Frankenstein of motherhood? Let us know. Where do they go?
That's a good way. I'm gonna say the Frankenstein thing more, because I feel like it's a little good.
No. Please. It's so good.
If they go to our website, playwrightsrealm.org/mothers, there's all the information there. And the show actually tonight is our first preview, so it's playing right now through October 12th.
Beautiful.
At the Duke on 42nd Street.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. I cannot wait to see how it evolves throughout this process and everything that we learn. I appreciate you talking
Absolutely.
About today. Yeah.
Thanks for joining us. We are Parent Artist Advocacy League for the Performing Arts, PAL. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, and on our website at PAALtheaterRE.com. Let's organize, network, and create.